Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. This week on the HR Power Hour, we're going to have two great guests. Lisa Jing, founder and CEO of Synergy at Work, and Dr. Amy Wood. She is the author of Life Your Way. And today we're talking to Lisa Jing. She's the founder and CEO of Synergy at Work, creating organizational cultures that work. All right, Lisa, how are you? Welcome to the show.
I'm well, David. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. You know, this topic is one that certainly has a lot of information in the last few years. Wellness, you know, and healthcare, employee health, corporate wellness has really been the buzz for the last few years. Certainly with the Affordable Care Act and everything else going on, it has a lot of attention, let's put it that way. But you have a little bit of a different take on it, and we're going to talk about it, called the Diamond Model. So I think what I'd like to do is first have you start and try to explain why employee health is such a big focus for companies today.
Well, David, there are a lot of factors that are driving it, and I'll sum it up kind of quickly. The costs are just spiraling out of control, and they just continue to rise. So the cost discussion is what's brought us to the table. That's not necessarily the only thing, though. You know, in the cost area, we are seeing direct costs continuing to go up, and employers are bearing the brunt of most of that, particularly self-insured employers. Just in recent years, we've seen the expenditures, you know, topping $2.6 trillion, you know, just in the last couple of years, which is like 10 times more than the costs were back in 1980. So, you know, it's really a hockey stick effect. And the direct costs, like doctor's visits, emergency rooms, pharmaceutical, these are the hard costs. But the side of it that I think is really important for employers to be looking at as well are the indirect costs. And that's the area, what we call presenteeism, which is lost productivity due to a health-related issue. And we're seeing that the loss in productivity is actually even higher than the direct costs. So this is something that employers need to be paying attention to. We're also seeing the focus on employee health being a critical factor because of an aging workforce. You know, we're all getting older. It's kind of the graying of the American workforce. And we're seeing as we get older, more and more health issues tend to come up, particularly lifestyle diseases, the cumulative effect of, you know, lifetime of bad choices. And so with an aging workforce, we need to keep everyone, particularly some of our more senior talent, engaged, healthy, productive, innovating, and health is absolutely a critical factor in all of that.
So your organization, for some reason it didn't.
More lifestyle diseases, which the good news is, lifestyle diseases as opposed to like infectious diseases and those kinds of things, we can really have an impact on lifestyle diseases through our choices, through the daily things that we do on a regular basis.
So what makes the Synergy at Work approach to health, you know, to employee health, corporate wellness unique?
Well, what's unique about Synergy at Work is that we really are committed to an integrated whole person approach to employee health and well-being. That's really the most effective way in bringing out the best in people. A lot of companies are kind of looking at health as an offshoot of the employee benefit program. And at Synergy at Work, we're really focused on employee health as a true business strategy in and of itself, not just a perk or a nice-to-have, but something that's absolutely critical to the sustainability and the competitive advantage of the company. Because, you know, we're only as good. Companies are only as good as the talent and the people within them.
Combat sometimes a generational statement that some people don't want to talk about their health, their issues at work, or they don't want to have this discussion? Because, you know, certainly we've heard that there is a little bit of a divide in the nation between, you know, how much information employers should really be talking about or providing in this information, how much that employees have the responsibility on. What's your take on that?
Well, health historically has been viewed as sort of a personal matter. That is something that we need to take care of on our own. I'm challenging that. I think employers, because they are bearing a huge brunt of the declining health in the country and also the financial implications of that, employers absolutely have to pay attention to the health of their employees. Because that's the only way they're going to stay competitive. And individuals each of us, we see our health as something that is important. We kind of know it, but it's one of those areas it's very difficult to change our behaviors. You know, our health-related habits, any kind of habit, and particularly those around our health, are very, very difficult to change. And so we don't want to make changes that are hard. You know, change is inherently, you know, takes a lot of focused effort. And so, you know, we would like to avoid it if we can. We just can't keep avoiding it any longer. You know, we're all experiencing increasing stress. You know, it's one of the most common issues in the workplace. We know it's not good for us, and I think it's important that employers help employees, help the team, address some of those issues. You know, stress being a major one, but nutrition, fitness, sleep, those areas, they're all important, as well as some of the areas that, you know, we don't typically think of as part of wellness, but at Synergy at Work, we're very committed to. Areas like finances, relationships, even spirituality. These are areas that are part of who we are and what we bring to the workplace. So in taking a whole person approach to employee health and well-being, then, you know, we're able to help employees address those areas in their lives that affect all aspects. It affects their work on the job, and it affects their own personal happiness and sense of well-being.
To give listeners an understanding as to your background, the organization's background, the people that work with you background, what type of, you know, history or experience do you have in these areas? What is it that you bring to the table that somebody would say, hey, you know, I understand that I feel comfortable giving some of this information to?
Sure. Well, my background, formally, my academic background is in the mental health industry. I was originally going to be a marriage, family, and child therapist. I have a master's in counseling psychology. And along the path to working towards that goal, I worked in a variety of different organizations. And I started to notice some organizations really flourish. Some teams excel and reach their goals, and people love coming to work. And then other organizations tend to flounder. And I wondered, why is that? And so I became more intrigued with the group dynamic and organizations and how culture, the environment, both the implicit and the explicit environment within an organization, how that impacts individual happiness and success, and how that impacts the organization's overall success. And so I decided to switch careers and focus more on organizational dynamics, and specifically organizational culture and employee health. So that's kind of how, you know, the background that I bring to the table. I've worked in a large Fortune 500 company for over 12 and a half years as part of several culture initiatives there, diversity and inclusion. I was part of the founding team that launched the award-winning health program at Cisco Systems. And then I retired from Cisco a couple years ago and loved the work that I was doing, decided to continue doing it as an independent consultant. And so I launched Synergy at Work, put together my own message around the importance of a whole person approach to employee engagement, which emphasizes employee health. And, so now I'm out there working with companies and helping to help move the discussion from just employee health to employee health as a key factor in employee engagement.
So when you're talking about employee health with employees, how do you move the needle? In other words, how do you, and maybe this is part of the diamond method that you're talking about today, and I think maybe we should start with you explaining that, because I'm kind of interested in how you move the method and move the needle in these areas.
Okay. The diamond model, what I call the diamond model of integrated health and well-being, is a very distinctive conceptual and structural framework for an employee health initiative. And if you will, imagine a diamond shape, and there, the diamond, the name is a metaphor. I chose the diamond because it has, it's connoted with inherent value. A diamond is inherently precious, just as each of us is inherently precious, regardless of the state of our health. And the diamond is composed of many facets, which are all interconnected. Each is important. None is any more important than the other. And similarly, in the diamond model of integrated health and well-being, there are 10 facets of health, which are all interconnected. And those are nutrition, fitness, sleep, life balance, preventive care, relationships, finances, spirituality, interventions, and responsibility. Now, each of those facets has a working definition. And if anyone wants to check out my website at synergyatwork.com, you can see a detailed description and actually see the graphic image of the diamond model. And so the way the diamond model is, the conceptual framework is very helpful because having the model and visually depicted is a way to really get people on the same page. It can quickly communicate to executives within an organization and the employees what the company is looking to accomplish, what the definition is, a more holistic sense of health and well-being, encompassing many factors. The traditional factors of wellness we usually think of, like nutrition and fitness and sleep, but things that people don't normally think of as really part of a wellness model, like finances, relationships, how their work relates to meaning, you know, and purpose in their own life, those kinds of things. And so Synergy at Work is unique in this way. We use the model in a structural capacity to literally build a health program. First, getting conceptual buy-in from the top down. Because, you know, the only way you're really going to move the needle in any organization is to get those executive leaders on board. And then use the structural aspects of the diamond model to literally design, implement, manage, and measure the health initiative. So it's like sort of a plug-and-play framework. When you're looking at the model, it's like, okay, what have we got around fitness? What are we going to offer our employees? You know, it might be a web-based, wellness platform. It might be a walking in the, for example, of fitness. It might be, campaign to increase physical movement in the workplace, where people have standing workstations, which are actually becoming very, very popular. A walking program that really takes advantage of, maybe the physical campus. When I worked at Cisco, we had these beautiful trails and walkways between buildings, which people didn't have time to use because they were running from building to building, but they were actually driving between buildings because they didn't have the time to walk between them.
Yeah, there is irony. There is irony to that, isn't there? And we're certainly going to talk more about this diamond model when we come back. You're listening to the HR Power Hour. We're talking with Lisa Jing, founder and CEO of Synergy at Work, and we will be right back on News Talk WLLB. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
I am pleased to announce another national sponsor for the HR Power Hour. It is the Northern Insurance Group. They do business, commercial, and personal insurance and are licensed agents in 28 states. Northern Insurance Group is an independent insurance agency with a staff that offers over 60 years of experience. They represent a carefully selected group of reputable insurance companies that will make the best decisions for their clients. Whether you are an individual, a group, an association, or a business, their staff is committed to excellence and making sure that you get the right insurance. You can count on an experienced staff at Northern Insurance Group to put together the best program available to you. So go to northerninsurancegroup.com. That's northerninsurancegroup.com. Or call 207-878-7602. That's 207-878-7602. HR Power Hour is proud to have you as a sponsor. And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. We're talking with Lisa Jing, founder, CEO of Synergy at Work, and we're talking about health and corporate wellness. Lisa, you've provided a pretty good overview in terms of telling what it is, kind of talking about your process of what you have in terms of your organization, and this diamond model that you have. What I'd really like to do now is have you take me with the diamond model into a client company, talk about how that all is put together, what the approach is, what the results people can see from it, and then wrap it up in terms of the, you know, especially the results that really make a difference in an organization, what an organization can tangibly see from it.
Sure. David, when a company adopts the Diamond Model of Integrated Health and Well-Being, they're buying into the concept of really addressing the whole person in various areas of their life. And so the way we use it structurally to build a health program is we look at the model and we look at where can we get started? You know, where can we engage this employee population so that they are actively invested in their own health and ready to, you know, to get started? And one area might be in preventive care. Let's say we've got a company, they want to put in a health program, they want to see the benefits of cost savings and increased productivity and increased innovation, retention, all of that. And so we might want to start with preventive care, having a health screening, that we kind of plug that in literally under the facet of preventive care. So we offer health screenings. Employees get a sense of what their numbers are, as we say, you know, cholesterol and blood pressure, and maybe they find out for the very first time that they have a health risk that they had no idea was a concern for them. So then we look at what kind of programs might we offer and kind of plug into this model that would meet some of the needs that are showing up in this particular employee population. Now, of course, all the health information is kept private. The employer never sees any personally identifying health information. What they do see is aggregate data. The vendor who's doing screenings will give them, you know, kind of an overview of what they found. And maybe in a particular population, what they're seeing is, you know, people are not eating well. The dietary habits are really, you know, just a call for action. So the employer decides to put in an education program around nutrition, maybe addressing the on-site cafeterias or the vending machines, offering online education or live workshops at the various workplace settings to get people more knowledgeable about what does it really mean to eat healthfully? What are some practical guidelines? That's an example. Maybe some other information comes up, like sleep, a very often overlooked area. Sleep is tied to so many different areas of our health. It's a factor in chronic disease, certainly in weight management, certainly in resilience and stress management. So the company decides that they're going to focus on educating employees around sleep. Not just educating, but they're actually going to create some practices in the work environment that allows people to get a good night's sleep, like making it okay to turn off your cell phone at night, to log off and not be working into all wee hours of the night just because we can, because we've got all these devices that keep us connected. So they decide to educate people, create some cultural habits around letting people strategically disengage from work so that they can rest, relax, recuperate, and sleep. Those are some examples of how the model can be used to actually structure a program that is customized and unique for each individual organization. And it just depends on what each organization needs. No company is the same, and part of my consulting service is to be very focused on the individual needs of a client, to really build, as an architect would, a unique solution, combination of resources and vendors and such for the client's particular situation, their setting, their organizational culture, their preferences, and of course their budget.
Do you work with insurance companies, Anthem, some of the big ones, in regards to trying to help by improving the employees, if you want to call it health overall, to try to help them, help the organization with their health rates?
Well, you know, I am actually reaching out to insurance agents and brokers that are working. I haven't directly reached out to the payers themselves. I am working with agents and such to get into organizations that are, of course, making decisions around their health plan, because a health plan has to support the company's strategy around employee health and well-being. If you want employees to be proactive around their health, then you need to make sure that preventive care is accessible and is paid by the health plan without having to pay the deductible first. You know, the design of the health plan can drive the employee behavior. So in working with the agents, I'm helping them educate their employees or their clients around how the health plan design drives the kind of behavior that really focuses on prevention, not just treatment of chronic disease or treatment of issues when they come up. You got to have both, of course, but prevention is the long-term solution. You know, the dealing with the chronic diseases and those kinds of things, they have to be tended to. But once you're already in there, then you're in a very costly situation, and you have to address that. But the long term is really to get companies to set up a culture, put in a full program, not just a single component of a program. You know, a walking program is not a wellness initiative. It's just a program. To have a true initiative, you have to have a strategy that goes with that.
I think is a difference, isn't it? That's kind of a unique, that is kind of an approach that works versus just, hey, we'll throw something at it quick.
Right. Right. It needs to be tied. The health initiative needs to be tied to a larger strategy. And, you know, when I work with a company, I'm helping them tie the health initiative into the total employee value proposition. You know, how does the whole cultural piece, how does this company operate? You know, what is part of the making health a part of the identity of the company and the way they do business? And employees can feel the difference. They know when it's just a program kind of hanging out there to try and, you know, earn an award for, you know, best company to work for, versus when this is really a part of what the company believes in and it really values. A well-run, well-designed, and well-run employee health initiative can be a huge factor in attracting the right talent and retaining and developing them. And, you know, employees say, engagement survey, you know, we see it all the time, that employee health initiative really helps that when their company commits to that, they feel like the company really cares about them.
Absolutely. You know, it's not just about the work. It's about their whole being and really where they are. You know, we're coming to the end of our segment here. I want to make sure people have an opportunity to know how to reach you, certainly after the show. On the HR Power Hour website, we will have your information and your click-through information. But give a second, give your website, give some information about you, and then obviously people can go to either that or the site directly after.
Sure. Best way to reach me is through my website, which is www.synergyatwork.com. That's synergyatwork.com. I do offer a free consultation for employers and insurance brokers who would like to explore how Synergy at Work can help them build a true strategic health initiative in their organization that's going to return cost savings, both direct healthcare costs, reduce those costs, and savings in lost resources to, you know, diminished productivity. So we're going to boost productivity, we're going to save money, and create a culture where people are really excited about going to work, they feel like they're valued, and they are really energized because they're healthy in mind, body, and spirit. They are bringing their whole self to work for everybody's benefit.
No, I think you've done a great job of explaining the process today. I think, you know, I want to thank you, Lisa, for being on the show today. Synergy at Work, great organization in regards to employee health and corporate wellness. Again, go to HRPowerHour.com after this show, and we will be happy to provide direct information to Lisa. Again, thank you very much.
Thanks, David.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, and we will be right back. I want to introduce you today to a new HR Power Hour sponsor. It's the AARP. They, of course, are a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization with a membership of, yes, more than 37 million people. Here in Maine, there are over 230,000 members, and their office is located right here in Portland, Maine. Their work spans the entire state, and they are a trusted source for lifestyle tips, news, and educational information, AARP products, and certainly the AARP magazine. AARP is a great organization. They help people turn their goals and dreams into real possibilities. They strengthen communities and fight for the issues that matter most to families such as healthcare, employment security, and retirement planning. So I want to thank the AARP as a new member of the HR Power Hour sponsor family. So for more information about the AARP in Maine, go to www.aarp.org/ME.
You might hear some advice from your friends on choosing a health plan.
Darling, you must choose the gold healthcare plan.
Not the silver plan. Too much trouble. Do they have a stainless steel plan?
I like bronze, like my tan.
Are sunburns covered? Instead, take advice from a licensed agent from Northern Insurance Group.
Meet face-to-face with a local healthcare exchange professional. Call Northern Insurance Group today. We have the resources to make sure you make the right choice.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. Our sponsors for today's show, AARP, taking on issues that matter. Northern Insurance Group, meeting your business, commercial, and personal insurance needs. And the law firm of Jackson Lewis, all we do is work. Today we're going to be talking with Dr. Amy Wood. And we're going to be talking about a great topic today, navigating negativity in the workplace. Amy, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
No, it's going to be fun.
Hey, it is going to be fun.
It is, because we're not going to be negative. We're going to be positive
right.
on this
we're
show.
We're going to be really positive, really optimistic.
Absolutely. So first of all, you know, for listeners who don't know who you are, give a little overview of where you've been, what you're at, what you're doing,
sure.
so that people kind of know.
Sure. I'm a psychologist. I'm based in Portland, Maine, and I really specialize in helping people to be more effective at home and work by streamlining their decision-making and their behavior to make it more manageable. I'm the author of the book Life Your Way, Refresh Your Approach to Success and Breathe Easier in a Fast-Paced World, and that pretty much explains what I do. You know, we're living in a society that's increasingly overwhelmed with information and options and demands, and so I help people to cut through that clutter and figure out what's best for them. And one of the things that I really focus on is optimism, because that's a number one way to be more effective and to get through a lot of the overwhelm. But I think it's important to help people to understand what optimism really is, because it gets a bad rap in our culture.
So you're saying optimism, and that,
yes.
of course, leads people to think positively. Because
right.
people are optimistic. But, you know, you and I both know negativity isn't all bad all the time.
That's right.
There's a little healthy skepticism sometimes.
Exactly, yes.
So explain that if you could.
Well, the true optimist is not someone who is always focusing on the bright side. And that's, I think, what our culture believes, which is a misrepresentation. And it actually leads people to a lot of disappointment and frustration, because they can't be on the bright side all the time. It's not normal and it's not healthy. True optimism is really having a very broad perspective and looking at the big picture and saying, okay, not everything's perfect. I'm not Pollyanna here. I see that we have problems. Let's see how we can solve the problems. And we can solve problems by focusing on the future and focusing on what's working and using our strengths and looking at the potential rather than sticking in the muck of the negativity. So it's really looking at the good and the bad and solving the problem by focusing on what's working.
By the way, you said in that answer, which I loved your answer, it was great, but you said normal. What is normal? Anyway, you don't have to answer that.
But what is normal?
What is normal? I always ask that question. What is normal? And there's never really a good answer for that, but that's all right. So tell me about some of the things that you think are critical to an organization to think about when they're really talking about being optimistic and realistic in their approach.
Well, optimism is not denial, and I think a lot of the positive thinking hype that we hear now, you know, in self-help, with self-help books and blogs and talk shows that you see on TV, you know, where it's all about transform your life in 5 easy steps just by changing your attitude, focusing on what you're happy about, letting go of what's negative. Organizations and people can get into trouble when they are in denial about what's really happening. So to be an optimistic organization, it's really important to look at the entire picture, as I said earlier. So looking at what's working in your organization, looking at the problems in the organization, but not being fixated on the problems. And this is where navigating negativity is really important, to not completely dismiss the glass half-empty perspective, to look at the value, look at the wisdom in that perspective, and take that and use it to solve problems pragmatically, and then leave the pointless negativity behind, if that makes sense.
No, it does. And I think it's interesting, you know, people, when they are at work, it's kind of like being at a family. And so there is, over time, this culture that develops. And the culture sometimes can be negative, it sometimes can be positive, it can be a mix. Of course, it's usually based on the interactions between people. And that is, of course, the challenge, right? Because people have good days and bad days. And
that's right.
And people say, well, you know, I'm having a good day today, and everything's hunky-dory and rosy, and I'm really optimistic today. And tomorrow, it's been a bad day, and everything's negative, and I hate everything, and I hate everyone. So, you know, how do you manage that strain from an HR perspective, from a owner's perspective? Because you know, they're looking at this and they're thinking to themselves, well, you know, I've got a great team today, but why can't I make it consistent?
Well, I think that to look at the bigger picture is really important again. So to look at your company, your organization, or your team, or yourself, not just from what's happening in the moment, from that perspective, but stepping back and saying, okay, over time, how much of this is optimistic? How much of this is positive, and how much is negative? So, for example, many, many people come to me, you know, I do a lot of executive coaching, a lot of therapy, a lot of life coaching, and people come to me wanting to improve their life, and they take a few steps forward, and then they come in and they say, oh, I've gone back to square one, I had a terrible week last week. And they look at that like they're starting over, and I try to explain to them, if you look at the perspective from where I sit, I see that you've come in to see me several times, and you're making progress, and you just had a bad day. That's fine. You can't be on top of things every minute. And because we are so much as a culture into quick fixes and one size fits all cookie cutter solutions to problems that are supposed to catapult us to success and transform our lives, we have no patience for a nonlinear way of moving ahead. So we don't understand that human growth and organizational growth and development involves going forward, going back, going sideways, you know, going all different directions. But as long as you're consistently moving forward, if you look at the big picture, like over the past year, and you see, just like when you look at your stock portfolio, you know, maybe 1 month you went up and then you went back and then you went up and then you went back again. If you look overall at the year and say, well, we went back and forth a lot, but still we're ahead. That's what you want to look at.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting. I mean, you've got companies that are very sales-driven at time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they're looking at the bottom line at the end of each week, month, day, depends on if you're talking retail, or if you're talking, you know, a situation where they have to have answers today. And then they have the stress of the bottom line. So maybe they can't afford to wait. And so you do hear owners and HR professionals that are forced to push forward faster than maybe their team is ready for or can capably handle, but the powers and the pressures of the bottom line put an actual burden on that. How do you address that realistic and honest approach that actually happens?
Well, I think you have to understand what makes people motivated, what makes people successful. And the tortoise and the hare story comes to mind for me here, you know, where the tortoise took a break and ended up winning, while the hare was more focused on moving quickly. What I know as a psychologist is that if you take regular breaks and if you allow yourself time to process your emotions, whether they're positive or negative, and you work through things, you're far more apt to be successful. So pushing people to constantly produce and constantly be thinking positively, that may work in the short term, but ultimately those people are going to break down. They're going to get resentful. They're not going to be productive. So the smart manager today, the smart business owner, smart HR person, knows that it's really important to give employees an opportunity to nourish themselves, to replenish themselves, to process difficult times so that they can move through it rather than just shoving those not-so-pretty emotions down so that they can be productive. Because you know what? When you just ignore emotions that are negative, that need to be processed, you know, you may think that you've gotten rid of them because you've pushed them down, but that takes a tremendous amount of energy to deny those emotions, and they come up anyway. They come up in the form of not letting you sleep soundly. They come up with unexpected outbursts or unexpected lack of concentration, inability to stay focused on a project. So smart people know that when you take time away from work regularly and you get out in nature or you play with your dog or you do things that are fun, you exercise, you read something that's frivolous every now and then, you're far more apt to be effective at work.
We're talking with Dr. Amy Wood, and she's discussing navigating negativity in the workplace. Amy, we've talked a lot about different things having to do with optimism and positivity and negativity and kind of defined all that. Tell me about an individual when someone's really negative, and it's, if I like to call it gone negative in the workplace,
yeah,
and they really aren't on the team. They're really not somebody who is playing well with others. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're bringing others down.
Mm-hmm.
This is a real life situation that happens at every workplace.
It really happens a lot.
Unfortunately, it happens a lot. And we can argue the triggers on that. Maybe it's a supervisor. We can say, you know, maybe it's something at home. Whatever the reason for that is. How do you address that situation?
Well, I think you address it in steps. Now, one of the reasons that people who are deemed negative don't get along with others and cause problems is because people immediately dismiss that negativity. They don't find the wisdom in it. So the first step, let's say that you're in a meeting and there's a naysayer who regularly, no matter what the idea is, that person has some reason why it's not going to work. Most people in the room will dismiss that person as just a glass half person who doesn't really have any wisdom at all. The truth is that it's really important to listen to that negative perspective. You know, think about it, if you were building a bridge, you know, or you were about to do surgery on somebody, and that negative person in the room says something like, you know, that bridge may not hold up with this particular kind of mechanism, or there's something about this surgery that may not go well if you don't look at this. A very simple way to look at this is, you know, well, the picnic may not work, you know, as a group activity if it rains that day. You know, that person is bringing up a very legitimate concern that needs to be looked at. And this is where die-hard optimists get in trouble because they don't want to look at what may not work. And again, the first step of optimism is to look at what problems there may be so that you can address those issues, and then you gather your strengths and you galvanize your motivation and move forward toward a solution. So the first step is always looking at that person who's making the negative statement and taking it into consideration and thanking the person for it. Now, the real trick here is knowing when to say enough is enough. So there are negative people who do provide practical wisdom, but then you've got to know when it's just getting into a point of bringing morale down and it's just pointless negativity and it's a drain on everyone, and that's when you've really got to stop it. And there are some ways you can do that.
And we're going to talk about that when we come right back. You're listening to the HR Power Hour. We're talking with Dr. Amy Wood. We're talking about navigating negativity in the workplace. We will be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
You might hear some advice from your friends on choosing a health plan.
Darling, you must choose the gold healthcare plan.
Not the silver plan. Too much trouble? Do they have a stainless steel plan?
I like bronze, like my tan.
Are sunburns covered? Instead, take advice from a licensed agent from Northern Insurance Group. Meet face-to-face with a local healthcare exchange professional. Call Northern Insurance Group today. We have the resources to make sure you make the right choice.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. And we are talking with Dr. Amy Wood, and you're a psychologist, and we're talking about the navigating negativity in the workplace. Before we went to commercial break, you were talking about an individual who's negative, and there is a point in which an organization says to themselves, okay, enough's enough, enough with the negativity. And so we got to do something about it. So talk about that. What does an organization do at this point when they've had it up to, quote-unquote, here?
Well, what I tell the people I consult with, you know, when you're dealing with a negative person who's unduly negative and you've already extracted whatever wisdom they have to offer, you know, the first thing I tell people is just give them a chair, meaning, you know, just let them vent a little bit. Because oftentimes people who are negative, they're acting negative because they're not getting attention from enough people in their life. And maybe it's because they don't know how to engage others because they're negative too much. But give them the benefit of the doubt. Give them a chair. Let them vent to you. Hear what they have to say. And then try to get them to work toward solutions, meaning that you can point out, you know, here are the positive things I see in your situation. Here are the strengths I see. How can you use those strengths to solve whatever the problem is that you're complaining about? So you want to be really solution-focused with them. And sometimes that's all the steering they need. But more often than not, people who are really negative will keep coming back to you, venting more and more about a particular problem. And that's when you really have to intervene to stop that negative talk. And so one thing you might do is you might say, you know, we talked about this before. Can you tell me what point you want to make with me today? So that you can stop, circumvent the venting and get right to them having to make a point. Because oftentimes when people are negative, they don't really have a point. They're just complaining. And that forces them to really stop and ask, do I really have a purpose here in talking? So the next thing that you can do is you can really engage them in trying to think positively by asking for specific spot positive responses. So let's say you're in a meeting and somebody gets a reputation for always being negative beyond a point where they're helpful. You can actually ask them, instead of just saying, what do you think about this project? You could say, what are three positive outcomes you can imagine? Or what are three great things that you like about working here or that you like about this idea? And then they're forced to try to come up with a positive spin on things. So those are just some ways that you can extract negativity, I mean positivity from a negative person. It takes a lot of coaching. The other thing that you might do, if someone is perpetually negative, you know, you might tell them that maybe they could benefit from speaking to someone about that. Like if the organization has an EAP, refer them to an EAP counselor. You know, let them know, I hear you. It sounds like you're having a hard time right now. Maybe you should go talk to a counselor about that and see what they think, see what their advice is.
Do you find that sometimes people think that I don't need that help? You know, they get so worked up that they don't want to talk to people. And how do you overcome that barrier? And can they force, as an employer, you to go see somebody?
Well, you can't really force anyone. And the interesting thing, you know, people always ask me about the type of people who come in for coaching and therapy. And the truth is, you know, it's not the craziest people or the most unhappy people that go for coaching or therapy, because they usually blame everybody else and they think it's their problem. So the people that I see in my office tend to be the people who are driven crazy by overly negative people or by the really crazy people. So the hardest thing usually about negative people is that they don't take anything on as their problem. They're always saying it's somebody else's problem. So the more you can redirect them by asking the questions that go for positive responses, and the more you can refer them to the appropriate person, like a counselor to talk to, the less opportunity they're going to have to just vent about their problems. So it's really about not enabling the negative behavior to continue. You know, so for example, one common type of negative person in the workplace is the gossip, right? The person who's
always
talking about other people in a negative way, person who is always spreading rumors, that sort of thing. And the best thing you can do with someone like that is just immediately change the subject so that they really have no way of talking about that again with other people in the office. And what you want to do too with a negative person is encourage anything that you hear come out of their mouth that's positive, because negative people, as I said earlier, often are speaking negatively and complaining because they don't get attention from anyone, because they don't know how to engage people in a positive way. And so if you hear a negative person say something positive once in a while, really latch onto that and say, wow, thank you so much for mentioning that. That's really interesting. Or I really like when you talk about things in a positive way, because it really infuses positivity into this workplace and it makes it more fun to work with you. Because then what they start to see is that it pays to try to be positive, because you're going to engage people more, get more attention, more people will come to you, you'll have more power. So it's really about ignoring or shutting down the negativity beyond the point where it's useful and helpful, and encouraging positivity as much as you can.
No, that's great. I mean, you're absolutely right. There's no question. And dealing with this can be, I hate to use the term, an HR nightmare, right?
Yes,
it can be something.
Can be.
It can be. And there are, you know, things that can be said and can't be said. And there are things you have to be careful what you say, because people can take offense to it, right? Because they don't perceive it as their, quote unquote, their problem. It's the other person's problem, and that's always the negotiating part. I find it interesting that typically when you have these situations, a lot of time they don't know they're negative, and no one's ever told them they're negative, and so they almost take it very personal, don't they?
Yes, they do.
So when you're talking about dealing with that not taking it personal part, how do you pass that point when they're saying, but it's not me, it's the other person?
Well, what I do with people like that is I get them to focus on, okay, if it is the other person, what can you do about this? Instead of just complaining, you know, you want to work with negative people to find solutions, because typically these glass half full people just want to complain. They don't want to solve problems. So if you can keep bringing it back to, okay, you know, so this person is bothering you at work, let's think of some ways that you can solve this problem by using your strengths. Now, this is something you really want to do with negative people, is help to find what their strengths are. We all have strengths. And the best way that we can navigate life, not just negativity, but life in general and work in general, is to access those strengths and channel them into solving problems. So pointing out to that person who's being negative, you know, you're really good at this. You're really organized. Or, you know, you're really detail-minded. Or, you know, you are really great at calming people down sometimes, or, you know, you're really good at noticing what needs to happen to improve a situation, and asking how can you use those assets that you have, that incredible ability to organize, or that incredible detail-mindedness that you have, how can you use that in this situation to help solve your problem? What would make it easier?
No, you're absolutely right. This really isn't a quick fix, is it? I mean, these
no,
are things
not.
That are, and that's probably the problem, right? Is that people expect a quick fix. And,
that's right.
And
that's
it's not.
And that's really one of the reasons, you know, there is so much negativity, is because we don't have patience for it. We always want to be happy. You know, the problem is that there is so much information out there that tells us in the self-help industry that if we just do this or that, everything will be wonderful, and we won't have to experience negative emotions. And so we look at negativity as this horrible thing. You know, it's this black and white thing. It's all good or all bad, and we want it to be all good. And that's just not real life. The truth is that emotions of adulthood, they're all over the map, and we experience everything from rage to joy all the time and everything in between. And it's important to welcome all of it and process all of it and not be afraid of it, but not to wallow in it, to work through it enough so that you can start to see the light at the end of the tunnel, because that's where real positivity comes from.
No, you're absolutely right. And, you know, it's interesting. I think this has been a very helpful discussion to try to make people understand that these aren't quick fixes. If there's a takeaway I get from this, is obviously it's the quick fix, because we're all about quick fixes. That's what we're all about. There's no question about it. As we wrap up here in the last minute or so, kind of give me a something that you want to tell the audience that says, hey, this is important for the audience to know that you can help them with in dealing with this issue. What's a takeaway? What's something from them that they should really understand?
Well, I think, as you said, David, it's not a quick fix. It takes practice, and we expect instant results. And in a lot of ways in our society, we can get instant results because we have so many gadgets now that make things happen faster and faster and faster on demand. But changing a personality is not easy. It takes time. So when you're dealing with someone who is chronically negative, remember that it's taken a lifetime for them to get that way. And it takes careful training to condition them to act differently. And the best way you can do that is by constantly listening to them, again, taking the wisdom from what they're saying, thanking them for that, and focusing on steering them to solutions. To do that over and over again, but it could be worth it.
Amy, I got to tell you, this has been a great topic, talking about navigating negativity in the workplace. We've been speaking with Dr. Amy Wood. And after this show, everybody can go to the HR Power Hour website, and Amy's information will be there so that you can connect with her directly. One click and she's there. And, you know, you said, obviously, this is a long process, but the fact is you got to do it right. And Amy,
That's
I want to
right.
thank you very much for providing that information to us today.
Thank you for having me on your show.
This has been the HR Power Hour. And now the HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by Northern Insurance Group. Licensed agents in 28 states, business, commercial, and personal. Go to northerninsurancegroup.com. What are some succession plan fundamentals? 1. Buy-in from executives. 2. Identify key roles. 3. Define the competencies and motivational profiles required. 4. Identify those who are the most potential. 5. Engage leadership. 6. Utilize a leadership development format. And 7. Develop a database of who you need to showcase. Develop a job matrix is number 8 for key positions, because that is going to be where the rubber meets the road. Don't wait until Talis decides to resign. Start planning now and make succession planning success for 2014. And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by Northern Insurance Group at northerninsurancegroup.com. Next week on the HR Power Hour, we're going to be speaking with Mark Ventola. He is a employment attorney with Sheehan Finney, Bass and Green in Boston, Massachusetts. And he's going to be talking about an update to the wage and hour issue, a topic that is critical for all employers. So that's on the next HR Power Hour. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.